Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of our other episodes at cinematica.co.nz.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this fine theatre. I have been called the Master of Suspense, but nothing is more horrifying than talking or texting in the middle of a movie. Please do not text during the movie because it makes everyone psycho. Sincerely and emphatically, Alfred Hitchcock.
Thank you very much, Anthony Hopkins as Alfred Hitchcock, backing our Cinematica campaign to get people to keep their cell phones in their pockets and silence them during the movies. That's actually playing.
Keep your mouth shut, please.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's actually playing in front of movies in America at the moment. There's quite a lot of that going on in the States and in the UK with those sort of turn your phones off. There's a very annoying one in front of a lot of films playing in England, which features the stars of The Sweeney, and sponsored by a cell phone company. As well, which is, yeah, just extremely odd. This is Cinematica, and this is Season 3, Episode number 1. It's Happy Birthday to Us. Those are the Jaffers. Those are our special birthday Jaffers.
Chowing down on them.
Yeah. Happy Birthday to Us. It was a year ago that we started this little experiment, and we're so glad that people are still listening, still feeding back to us, still tuning in, I suppose is the word, isn't it, in the old-fashioned sense. I'm Dan Slevin, and joining me here in the Cinematica studio today, I was going to say but it's not an R, it's an is again, because Si's busy again this week. We're determined to have him back next week. But Kaylee, how are you?
I'm very good. Busy. There is a new cinema opening, and I may or may not be assisting with that new cinema opening, which shall remain unnamed.
Yes, it's a mystery, but if you're in Wellington, I expect you will have heard or will be hearing about it very soon. Public sessions on Friday. Is that right, Kaylee?
That is correct.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And I just think it's always fantastic when people open new cinemas because, as you have been pointing out, in places that are a little less fortunate than Wellington, cinemas are closing. What's happening in Vancouver?
Oh, my goodness. It was announced that the I want to say legendary. That may be a bit strong, but it's quite legendary.
As long as you don't say iconic.
No. It's legendary because it's so divey and terrifying. Like, it looks like a brothel or something.
It's a flea pit.
It is a flea pit, but it's Vancouver's flea pit. It's been the home of the Vancouver International Film Festival for ages, and so many fond memories lining up in front of it for hours in the rain waiting to get into my film. The Empire Grand Full 7 Cinemas, which is a multiplex in downtown Vancouver, will close on November the 4th, which also puts the Vancouver International Film Festival kind of on edge, because there have been a lot of cinema closures in Vancouver, and now they need more venues to put those movies into. And some of we have one really, really big multiplex right in the middle of downtown, and that's just not going to work for the festival, I don't think.
Is it independently owned, or is it owned by a chain?
It's actually owned by a chain known as Empire Theatres. So I posted this article on Facebook the other day, and actually, when I went to go read it, almost burst into tears because I found out there's so many other cinemas that have closed. So when I go home for Christmas, I don't know what I'm going to do. Oak Ridge was closed. I spent most of my formative years at university. I was living out by that cinema. That's been closed. It was one of my favorites, too, because it was in a mall, but it was really small. He walked in. There wasn't really a candy bar. It was just cinemas. It was fantastic. The Ridge Theatre, which is it's not really a suburb because it's quite close, one of the other regions, which is another fantastic Vancouver Film Festival venue and also just a really nice old cinema. The Ridge Theatre has a lease until September 2013, but may close earlier if its landlord uses a demolition clause. other cinema.
Oh, no, no. Yeah. I when I was at the Paramount, we had a demo clause in our lease, and it just meant that you were always on edge. You just never knew. If somebody came in and said, we want to turn this into a car park, boom, that was it.
It's a great one because it's a cinema, and it's really old school because there's a cinema, and then right next door is the Ridge Bowling Alley. Yeah, and it's a really nice, really nice area. And there's a list of others. So if you read the article, you'll see how quite sad it is. Van East Cinema as well, little tiny, not boutique as in fancy, but boutique as in only a few screens.
It's a reminder, really, I think, that here in New Zealand, we are extremely well off for cinema experiences.
And a lot of people go to the cinema here. It's really driving the industry. And clearly in Vancouver, it's not a thing that's happening. It's a place where films are made, but not necessarily watched, I guess.
Well, we hope you'll be able to report back on some more positive news when you go back to visit.
I have a feeling I'm going to be doing a lot of photography of all these abandoned cinemas because it's a huge list.
Right, right. Well, and you'll post a link to that article in the show notes for today. I know it was up on Facebook, but just as a reminder for people who maybe, you know, some people aren't members of Facebook. You know,
no.
I understand this to be the case. I don't know who they are, but in today's episode, I suppose we should start the show, shouldn't we? In today's episode, Liam Neeson gives the orders in Taken 2. Time travel gets an indie twist in Safety Not Guaranteed. 76-year-old Ken Loach does whiskey in The Angel's Share. And Bradley Cooper cheats his way to another bestseller in The Words.
But I did this once. I want to see if it works again. Have a gong in the show. Sort of worked.
Sort of worked. Close enough. And is that's you telling me that you want to tell us what's in the mailbag, don't you?
Yes, that is the mailbag gong. I'm going to start using that. I need to get a spoon that's louder. lots of Dread and Looper in the Twitter feed this week, which is great. Rudy Six, two-word review for Dread, slow-mo-v, like the drug, pretty much the only interesting part. It was confirmed by Jack Yan and Robert Caddo that it's Carl Urban, not Urban.
Right. Yes.
And Jack Yan went to school with the man in question, which I'm very jealous of.
And Jack That's Yan, Urban. Former Wellington mayoral candidate and possibly future mayoral candidate for Wellington. He was dropping hints about that today.
Maybe you can get Carl on board like the...
If he can get Judge Dredd as his spokesman.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would argue back.
Kiwi Frenzy took his kids to see Hotel Transylvania 3D. Surprisingly good. Their two-word review is Monster Fun. Miriam Ruth Ross, Two Little Boys, Twisted Buddy Movie. Rudy Six will get two this week because this one was really funny. Oh, is a retweet from Vaughn Davis. Taken two, actual name, taken 2 hours of my life. Robert Caddo, of course. Oh, everyone's just doubling up this week. This is great. Our super fans for cinema for season 3. Yeah. Robert Caddo, Les Intouchables. Untouchably Lovely, the film that is. Genki Beth, Intouchables is
And I think it's Genki Beth.
Genki Beth.
Yes, I think we've been corrected.
Right. Okay, Beth.
Yeah.
Beth Brash. Two-word review for Intouchables, Classy Bromance.
Yeah, there's a few people that got to see that, even though it's the first week of 2 weeks of sneaks, so it doesn't actually open for another 2 weeks, doesn't it? Because it's got another weekend of sneak previews for The Intouchables, and so we're not going to be reviewing it ourselves on the show until next week because we just sort of, there's no point talking about it until it opens properly, really.
Yeah, yes. And that's about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just on the subject of Miriam Ruth Ross, she has a blog now. She has a blog. It's at miriamruthross.wordpress.com. And her first article is on Dread. And this is, you want to set aside some time for this one, because Miriam's an academic at Victoria University, a very, very a big expert on 3D, and it's a fascinating article with lots of references. It's kind of it takes a bit of an academic approach, but I think it's fantastic that that she's using her time to write an academic or an academic-y article on what is basically a sort of loud 3D blockbuster like Dread. You know, I think it's fantastic. So miriamruthross.wordpress.com.
Excellent.
And I suppose it's time to find out what New Zealanders have been going to this weekend.
Yes.
You know, now that we know that everyone's going back to the pictures, let's have a look at the New Zealand box office for last weekend. And down from 3 to 5, Looper. Down 40% in box office after how many weeks? 3 weeks, I think. Then in it, or at number 4, staying steady at number 4, Pitch Perfect. Down 1 at 3, Hotel Transylvania. Down 1 at 2, Madagascar 3. So, you know, if
it's
Taken...
sticking in there.
It is. If Taken 2 hadn't opened, it is still school holidays this weekend. So, if Taken 2 hadn't arrived, it would basically be the same lineup as last week. But Taken 2 has
taken the number one spot.
Oh, you legend. Just under $1 million for the weekend and on 126 screens. So, big, big release for Taken 2. And we will be talking about it very shortly. In fact, round about now.
Men. Our brothers. Our sons. We will find him. We will have our revenge.
Dad.
Take one of the guns and two of the grenades.
You have 30 minutes.
This is not a game.
What are you going to do?
What I do best.
We will have our revenge, says Radha Subudja, who's plays these...
Who should have been subtitled.
But he plays that bearded guy. He plays these sort of Albanian, Kosovan, Serbian.
He plays the token like Palestinian bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's always a bad guy. I said in my review in the Capital Times that this film should actually have been called Typecast 2, because everybody's basically doing the same old stuff that they've been doing. Mm. Even Liam Neeson, who I do have a bit of a soft spot for, you know, the fact that at 60 he's become this action hero. He's really sleepwalking through this, isn't he?
He is. So,
which one of us is going to talk about this one? Who's going to do the plot summary? Is that you?
I will.
Okay.
That could be me. So Taken 2 is a sequel to Taken, and I'm just going to free roll with this one. Free association. Season 3 is out of control. We're going to go really experimental this season.
We need Simon back, don't we, to give us some discipline.
Sugar high from the Jeffers. Yeah, so sequels are Taken. Liam Neeson is going to... Where does he go?
Istanbul,
thank you. Istanbul for a holiday and decides to
He's a security professional, so he has a bit of work to do.
Right.
Oh. He's a tough... Oh, did you sleep through that bit? Maybe that was it. Maybe that
no,
was
I,
it.
No, I slept in the middle.
Okay.
I took a nap. This is how good this film
during
was.
During the noisy part.
Yeah. So anyway, him and his wife get captured, and basically their daughter has to save them this time. They get taken.
Yeah, that's right. So in the original film, she was the one kidnapped, and he had to basically destroy most of Paris in order to find her.
And now she's struggling. She just needs to be a normal life, even if that means pretending.
Leave me alone, Dad. Leave me alone.
Just if everything is okay, just if I can just pretend to be normal.
Yeah. But in this film, he's the one that's kidnapped along with the missus or the ex-wife, and she has to do a lot of the hard work. Mm. But interestingly, she can only do this because he has this magic cell phone.
Yeah, that looks
a
like
a magic emergency cell phone that looks like an iPod Nano that he's secreted in his sock, and it only has 3 numbers in it. So all he has to do is be able to, he just pushes a button and it'll dial one of those numbers. He gets her and he gives her a whole lot of orders. And I think it was Secura59 on Twitter that said that he would make a most awesome GPS voice that basically just, you know, giving her orders. Turn left, turn right, 100 meters.
I would pay for that one.
Exactly. But we're laughing, but it's not very funny, is it, this film?
No.
It's not very funny and not very exciting and a bit sort of samey. Like I went to watch it at Reading's 3 here in Wellington, which is the 35mm screen rather than the DCP screen, packed out on a Sunday night, ended up sitting far too close. And for a film that cuts as fast as it does and wobbly cam and all of that sort of stuff, if you're too close, it really does give you a headache. And so I found myself bored, wishing it was over. Just get on with it. We know what's going to happen. We've seen it all before. This really is a cash-in, actually. Taken was interesting and new and kind of fresh in a real pulpy B-movie kind of way. It was, and that was, there was a freshness about seeing Liam Neeson, you know, a great classical actor, basically just kick the crap out of people. And this doesn't move anything on any further, unfortunately.
No, so. I just felt like the fast cutting was to make a fight scene that actually probably wouldn't look that interesting, really interesting. So I was watching, I was like, no one's really moving around much. And it's kind of like, Liam Neeson's doing some sort of like arm movements. I'm like, this is just not really interesting. I had a nap in the middle, as I said. I was like, I was awake. I just had my eyes shut and I was kind of like leaning to the sides. But yeah, it's boring. The whole plot is explained in the first, you know, they give away the surprises with, oh, I'm going to teach you how to drive. Oh, look, you're going to have to drive all the way through here. Oh, it's okay. I'll be back in 30 minutes to pick you up. Yeah, you will. 30 minutes, you're going to save her. I was like, boring. And what?
Big disappointment.
Big disappointment. And also, hello, the music from Drive, not appropriate to use like half the soundtrack in your film. Okay, that is like music that is linked to Drive. That soundtrack has its own thing.
It's like
pathetic.
I'm not gonna say what I was just about to say there. but it is. It's violating, isn't it? It's violating the precious memories of many movie fans by taking that music and using it inappropriately. So no, slap on the wrist. Yeah. Luc Besson should know better. Do you have two words, Kaylee, for it?
My two words are weak sequel.
All right. Yeah, good, good. Mine are a weak two words, actually, which is like Taken Where.
Oh, that's a good one, though.
So what? All right, moving on.
Guy writes a classified that reads, wanted, someone to go back in time with me. This is not a joke. You'll get paid after we get back. Must bring your own weapons. Safety not guaranteed. I've only done this once before. I want to find this guy. You know, see if maybe he believes in this stuff. I don't know. I think it could be funny.
You want to do it?
Do you sell guns here? Something sexy and affordable with killing power?
Is there a pest problem?
Well, if your ad had been written properly, I may have a better idea of what I need. I hope you worked harder on your calibrations.
My calibrations are flipping pinpoint, okay?
This is a film, Safety Not Guaranteed, that won the Waldo Salt Screenwriting Prize at Sundance earlier on this year. It's, I guess, a kind of hipster time travel movie, really. That's not a spoiler, is it, calling it a time travel movie?
That's what it's about.
Right there in the trailer.
Yes.
Mark Duplass, who is becoming a familiar face on our screens now, even though he's also a writer and a director, he's just an actor and a producer of this particular film. He was in Your Sister's Sister. He
Which
was
is still
of,
playing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And good. He's and it's kind of nice to see kind of a schlubby everyman character turn into a bit of a romantic comedy lead. In this film, he plays the guy who has placed the ad. Mysterious chap in sort of remote Washington village by the sea, and he's placed this ad for a time-traveling companion. The first voice you heard on that trailer was actually the journalist who's decided to go and do a story on it. He heads from Seattle to this little town, taking his two interns with him. But he's got ulterior motives as well. He's not really that interested in the story. He just wants to catch up with his old high school flame. Whereas our lead character, whose name is
Aubrey Duplass.
That's
the actress's name.
Right, Aubrey Plaza.
Sorry, right.
Yeah, she's not married to...
Oh, I just merged them together in my mind.
Yeah, Aubrey Plaza.
Good.
And she is sort of a little bit lost, has got this internship, she doesn't know if she wants to be a journalist, and so the opportunity to sort of go on this adventure really appeals to her. I didn't really like this film. Everybody's fallen in love with it. Everybody thinks it's charming, or it's so unusual, it's got all these really cool indie bands playing on the soundtrack, and... But it just didn't grab me at all, you know.
Really?
I was just like, I wasn't charmed by any of the characters. I didn't think it was as funny as it thinks it is. No, so yeah, I just wanted to get on with it, all the holes in the plot and. No, so, and not time travel holes either. You know how when you watch a time travel movie, everybody wants to just pick the brains out of the time travel bits and go, oh, that wouldn't happen. Well, actually, my holes in the plot start way earlier than that, to be perfectly honest. So Yeah, so just I was unengaged by it, I have to say, and I was uncharmed by Aubrey Plaza and uncharmed by Duplass in this particular one. So I'm going to throw it to you to try and win me over.
Oh, I really liked it. I did. It was like, oh, I thought it was a really lovely, like, I was going into expecting it kind of be this more like nerd adventure sci-fi story, but it ended up being this really cute little love story that ended up like blossoming. But I thought you were going to do a fake vomit there. blossoming between these two characters. And I just, I don't know, I found it really, really appealing and really cute. At least their story. I found the story of the
douchebag journalist.
Yeah, the douchebag journalist and the other socially awkward intern. I didn't like that story quite as much. That was a bit...
Who just happened to be Asian. You know, it's like I'm getting, you know, if you're going to have one Asian character, let's make him the most stereotypical character that we can. Mm. That's lazy. Lazy, yeah. Characterization, lazy writing.
Yeah, but I did enjoy how the story progressed. The end, I wasn't too hot on the ending, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really cute, and it was just something nice to, you know, watch and have a cup of tea and some biscuits and...
Okay.
Yeah, it was just a good little Sunday.
You don't want much, do you?
Rainy Sunday flick.
Right. Okay, well, something else that I would add is that I have heard feedback from others who have seen it in Wellington. I can't speak for the rest of the country. And my experience was the same, was that it wasn't a particularly well-presented film. Like, it's not DCP, and it's not 35, so it's e-cinema, which is the not quite as good version, and it looked really overcompressed, and it may be that it was quite cheaply made in the first place, so probably the original materials aren't flash, but it didn't look particularly good.
Right. So go see it on a small screen.
Yeah, that's right. The big screen, the blowing it up on the big screen will just amplify its flaws, I guess. Mm. It'd be interesting to see what happens to Aubrey Plaza next. She's a TV star of some description,
yeah,
is my understanding.
Yeah, she's on Parks and Recreation, and she was also in another film recently, but I can't remember.
Ah, well, so memorable. That,
but I like her. Well, she did plays that kind of, I don't know, strange, aloof, weird girl. So.
Yeah, deadpan. Yeah, and I know.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of the TV series Portlandia. She's been in that a few times.
Ah, right. Okay.
Playing her just this deadpan character. But it was nice because she kind of went a little bit beyond that in this film.
Just a smidge,
but it was nice because her deadpan character on Parks and Rec, I don't find that engaging because she's so like,
yeah, it's a one-note performance, yeah. Which I think maybe hints at other notes to come, but they don't really appear in this particular film. Safety not guaranteed. I think it was Sneaks this weekend, so it actually opens Thursday, so it will go a lot wider than it has, although everybody seems to have seen it already. Do you have two words for us, Kaylee, for safety not guaranteed?
Yeah, my two words are flippin' pinpoint.
My two words for safety not guaranteed, entertainment unguaranteed. Which, you know, your mileage may vary, as they say.
Well, I'm glad I changed it from my other two words, which was pleasure guaranteed. That would have been awkward.
I forgot to drop the news jingle into the shows you
had. Bah, bah, bah.
Brilliant. Well done. Well done improvising, Kaylee, for our first birthday. What's the news? What's been happening in the world of movies?
Right. The Golden Globes have fired the latest round in the 2013 awards battle by announcing that their ceremony on January 13th will be hosted by Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Yes! Dream team! Replacing Ricky Gervais, whose sardonic attacks on the Hollywood elite received mixed reviews during the last 2 years. TV quote-unquote funny man and TED director Scott McFarlane is hosting the Oscars on February 24th next year.
I think that this pretty much means that the Golden Globes are going to win the battle of the telecasts. Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's immaculate casting. It's still not going to make the Golden Globes any more relevant to anything.
But it'll make them funny and awesome.
Well, I might actually tune in this time around because watching those things is a little bit like fingernails on a blackboard for me.
Oh, but maybe I should just pop down to LA and go to the ceremony.
Are you going
to
be there?
Well, I'll be over in North America in January.
Right. In North America, close enough.
Yeah, I'll just get a flight to LA.
Going to be in the right continent. Yeah, and maybe see if you can get a media pass.
Yeah,
for, you know.
Yeah, just casually,
or join the Hollywood Foreign Press Association because you will be foreign press in Hollywood, why not?
Exactly. All right, Cinematica reporting live from the red carpet and the Golden Globes. Hold on to your butts, people. Titanic director James Cameron was so sick of fans saying he got his science wrong when Leonardo DiCaprio decided he couldn't share the floating door with freezing Kate Winslet and sacrifice himself for her that he enlisted TV's Mythbusters to recreate the scenario for real. Unfortunately for Cameron, the myth was busted. Two people can float on top of a door, particularly if you are smart enough to tie the life jacket to the bottom of it to aid buoyancy.
Which is a wee cheat, because, I mean, their hands were cold. What were they going to do under there to tie? She wasn't going to take the life jacket off. Was it like Leonardo DiCaprio, look, we'll both get on this door if you give me the life jacket. No way. No, I'm holding on to the life jacket, Leo. I don't care. So, okay, so it was a stretch, wasn't it?
Cameron's response was, I think you guys are missing the point here. The script says he dies, so he has to die. But maybe we screwed up and the board should have been a tiny bit smaller, but the dude's going down.
I love that response. It's like, oops, I really shouldn't have rattled this cage. But anyway, this
is... It sounded like his response sounds like, yeah, well, whatever. I'm James Cameron. I'm still James Cameron.
Yeah.
I still made Avatar.
Yeah, I'm king of the world.
And with The Last Dogs of Winter still playing in cinemas around the country, well, filmmaker Costa... I don't want to pronounce his name wrong.
Botez.
Costa Botez, thank you, has received another honor. He is a finalist in the arts category of the Dominion Post's Wellingtonian of the Year Award. Also nominated is friend of Cinematica, Tusi Tamasese, whose film The Order screened in Venice and was submitted for the Academy Awards.
And Tusi was our very first guest
a
year ago.
Lovely
interview. And I think that's still on the site, actually. I think you'll find that if you...
I think you'll find every single one of our episodes. Exactly. Except for the first three that we did, which were never released.
Yeah, the soft launch.
Yes.
So they're secret. We're keeping those, just not inflicting them on the world. But Tusi Tamasese, a lovely guest, and that was interesting. Two out of the five arts honorees, I guess, or nominees for Wellingtonian of the Year from the movie business, which was really cool. It's your turn.
It's my turn?
Yeah.
What am I doing?
Aren't you going to talk about your Pledge Me?
Oh, yes, sorry. What's going on?
Look, I passed the ball to you. You see,
sorry,
like an all that, you should see a gap. You're running.
We got
it.
More tweets, and I was excited.
Oh, just now?
People
are tweeting us while we're on the air.
Oh no, sorry, people are tweeting me, not Cinematica.
not as interesting.
Fame has its price.
Focus, Kaylee.
Okay,
Simon,
because out of control. Yes, so I have decided, because as I said earlier, I will be in North America in January because I'll be celebrating Christmas with my lovely family, who is hopefully listening. I'm going to pop down to Sundance because it will be on during the time that I am there. And so I am going to start this week, hopefully this weekend, a Pledge Me campaign looking for assistance with funding to get me to Sundance, which means that I can go to Sundance and report live from the beautiful Utah in the middle of winter. And
yeah, friends. So friends of Cinematica who want to find out more about what the Sundance vibe is like and want to get a sort of Kiwi flavor of the festival, Kaylee's going to
be
there.
Kiwi-Canadian.
Mm. Yeah, Kiwi-Canadian. Yeah. Okay, yeah. But if you want to find out a little bit more about what Sundance is like and you want to get that whole Cinematica touch.
And if you want me to bring you back like a mug or something.
Yeah, or a fridge magnet.
Yes.
Yeah, they fit into your luggage.
At Sundance this year, actually. There's some because they have some crazy designers for the gear. So yeah.
Right. Well, there you
Let
go.
Let me know what you'd like.
So maybe that's what you should put as your pledge rewards. Mm. So a certain number of dollars pledged, you get a fridge magnet. And you'll have to carry them all back.
God.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Okay, and so the link to that will be tweeted and Facebooked, etc., and in next week's show notes we'll be able to announce the actual link, because you haven't set it up yet.
No, I haven't.
You're
set it up.
You're just promising to.
Yes. So I want to announce that I'm going to Sundance. Please help me get there.
Okay. And then, of course, when you go to Sundance, I will have to I'll see your Sundance and raise you several other festivals next year, because, I can't have it my co-workers going to more glamorous festivals than me. It's just not on. Not happening.
So I think you could raise it by just going to a festival that's in the summer. So.
Yeah, well, Telluride was summer. It was walking around in, although it was 10,000 feet up in the air, so it wasn't quite as warm as it could have been. It wasn't shorts and jandals weather at Telluride. But yeah, they tend not to have festivals in summer places, do they? Movie goings is a winter thing. You know, if you're going to spend all day in the picture theater, you don't really want to be dreaming of the sunshine outside. So Berlin's a northern hemisphere winter.
Oh, I want to go to that one so bad. But I think maybe next year I might. Maybe I'll do the Vancouver Festival. It is a good one.
If it's got any venues left.
Yes.
I'm not who I thought I was. And I'm terrified that I never will be.
He knew the life he wanted. He knew what he had to do to get it.
Wait, not over yet. This is where it really gets interesting.
Well, that's a line of dialogue from the film that actually appears about three quarters of the way in. So a bit of a lame promise there, Jeremy Irons, because in fact it never delivers. What a load of old rubbish this is. The words, I must have fallen asleep because it made no sense. You know, it's very rare that you get a film where the credits roll and you think, what on earth have I just watched? And not in a good way, not in a Holy Motors way. This is in a way where you think, what? Was this supposed to be profound and artistic and literary? Or do you people just not know what you're talking about? This is a film that's written and directed by the guys who wrote the story, not the script, but the story for Tron, the new Tron film, and somehow they've managed to parlay that into this film called The Words. Should tell you what it's about, if I can remember. The premise is that Bradley Cooper is a struggling young New York writer who is having real problems getting people to even read his stuff, let alone publish it. He gives up full-time writing, goes to work for a publisher in the mailroom, that old cliche, which allows him to get married to his girlfriend, Teresa Saldana, and they go to Paris for their honeymoon. And in a secondhand shop, a junk shop, she finds a briefcase that they both fall in love with, and several weeks later he is putting stuff in the briefcase and he discovers in the lining or something a novel typed up, an old manuscript, and he reads it and it's brilliant. He has to read it in one sitting. This is, you know, the fact that he's been carrying this briefcase around for weeks is neither here nor there, right? He has to read it in one sitting. And then, supposedly, just to feel what it is like to have the words flowing through his fingers, he retypes it onto his computer. And his wife reads it and goes, "You've written this amazing novel. I always knew you had it in you. You must send it away immediately." And so he does. And people love it. It gets published. And he has to take this work on as his own.
She's not suspicious that he just like wrote this overnight?
Well, no. Well, she says, "Why did you keep it a secret from me?" As if he'd been typing away furiously for weeks, right? Anyway, he gets the Grand American Literary Prize, and the day after, he's sitting on a park bench as this fantastic success, just soaking up the Central Park atmosphere, and aging Jeremy Irons sits down beside him, and he has recognized his own novel. And the question is, what's he going to do? Is he going to pull the pin? Is he going to dob him into the American literary mafia? Is he going to take away everything that he's got? Well, that's, I guess, the point of the film. If you're going to watch it, then you're a braver man than I am. I won't spoil it for you. But around it, this story is actually being told. There's a kind of framing device, which is Dennis Quaid as another famous author giving a reading at an American university. And so he reads this story as part of his own novel, and then at each act one finishes, we go back to Dennis Quaid, and he's flirting with some graduate student played by Olivia Wilde. Then they go back, the second half of his reading, like people have evidently paid money to have him read the book to them, like it's an audio book or something. And then we go back to Bradley Cooper, and then we go back to the framing device with Dennis Quaid at the end. And by the end of it,
I'm confused. What is going on?
I know. So many stories. And I guess we're supposed to read the parallels. I guess the fact that at the very end of the film, Dennis Quaid stares straight at the camera looking sad.
Oh, no.
That yuck. They're supposed to, right? It's supposed to be. Anyway, it's just completely pompous, portentous.
Bollocks.
It is. Yeah, completely. Complete bollocks. And the only way the only hope that I can have for it is that maybe I slept through the bit that was the point.
Mm.
But no, extremely disappointing film. Well, it would be disappointing if I had hopes for it. I didn't really have hopes for it, so it's not that disappointing. But you know what I mean?
Mm.
And this is the second time that Bradley Cooper has played an author who cheats his way to a bestseller, because he did the same in Limitless 2 years ago. And it's like, wow, New York, struggling New York writer parts. We'll get Bradley Cooper to do it. So it seriously, if you're looking through the paper or checking the website for things to do this weekend,
and this
somebody says, oh, Bradley Cooper, in the words, Jeremy Irons, he's always good value, just say no, ladies and gentlemen. My two words, because you haven't seen this, have you? I was hoping that you would go so you could explain it to me. But
well, no, because I emailed you saying I was going to go, and then you told me it caused you to lose your will to live, so I decided to skip it and see Taken 2, which wasn't that much better.
Yeah, that's true. But at least the noise of Taken 2, sort of hustle and bustle, was kind of interesting. My two words for the words are bewildered yawning. Because that was pretty much my response to it as it happened.
Right.
Now, every year, about 2% of the spirit evaporates into thin air. It's what we call the angel share. Who's got a sensitive nose?
I'll get it.
A lime tasting. Fruity? Go on, have a wee guess.
Or maybe a Cragamore.
The most incredible whiskey. It will come to auction, so it'll be all over the press.
And since there are only 3 known bottles, the sale could raise £1 million.
What? This could be a big chance to make money, Robbie.
Make money? If I get caught, I get 5 years at least.
Right, that's that trailer where I got grabbed that audio manages to cram so much of that film into 2 minutes. I'm guessing that that was really unhelpful, that little bit of audio, so I apologise for that. Kaylee, are you going to be able to sort of extrapolate what the actual story is about?
Yes, and speaking of misleading things, I didn't watch the trailer before I went to watch. I just read the synopsis, and clearly I read it wrong, because I thought this would be sort of like comedic, because the poster, the font they've chosen is bright orange, and the photo's kind of like uplifting, so I was like,
It compares it to the full Monty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I genuinely think that they think that they've made a comedy.
Yeah, apparently it's listed as a comedy, but it's not. Maybe it's a sort of dark Irish comedy. Anyway,
Sorry.
Oh, what am I talking about? Scottish. Anyway, new film by Ken Loach, of course, which is about Robbie, a young man in Glasgow who's locked in a family feud that's been going on for ages, and his girlfriend recently had a wee baby, and so he desperately wants to switch around his life because he's, you know, drinking, drugging, kind of thug.
And he wants to sort himself out, doesn't he? He wants to be a father to this child.
Yes, and he wants, because his father was a bit of a dropkick, and so he wants to be a good dad, and he, you know, just wants to raise a really good boy. And so he while he's doing community service, he meets this lovely man who decides to give him a break, decides to, you know, help him out. So
yeah, he's like his community service officer, isn't
he?
Sort of the guy who drives you around to the various jobs, cleaning the graffiti off gravestones and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so this man introduces Robbie to whiskey, and it's
in a good way.
In a good way, yeah. they share a drink, and then they go to a distillery, and when they go on this distillery tour, they learn there is this whiskey that has been found that's like from a distillery that was closed 30 years ago. So it's like been aging forever in this barrel, and it's just been discovered, and it's worth a lot of money. And Robbie and his gang of community service buddies decide that this is a good way to raise money, is to
And get out, pay to get out of Dodge, basically, because Robbie's got, it turns out Robbie has a kind of magic nose, doesn't he? His palate for whiskey is like incredibly gifted, and he's worked out that you know this might actually be a way out for him. And a shortcut is to basically, it becomes a caper movie, doesn't it, at this point? It's like breaking into the bank. And so it makes it an interesting change. The first third of the film is ugly, violent, brutal, sweary.
A Ken Loach film.
It's a Ken Loach film, exactly. And then in the second two thirds, it sort of changes tack completely. Mm. And in fact, one of the problems I have with it is that it sows some seeds of you know, you're talking about that family dispute, the family feud that was going on, and then doesn't pay off. It doesn't pay it off, you know. It's like, I thought that there was going to be some resolution for that, and that they just like forget it. So that was a wee bit of a problem plot wise, and I think its change of tone is a bit awkward. I actually liked the first third better than I liked the second two thirds. I liked the grittiness of it.
He's good at capturing that really like kind of underbelly, but you know, that street like grit.
Yeah. That social realism, he does better than anybody else. And his films are brilliant at setting up the almost insoluble problems that the working poor have to deal with. How do you get out? How do you change your life when you have no money? When all you've got is willpower, you know? Politicians will tell you that that's all you need. Well, actually, what Ken Loach films will tell you, and they've always told you, is that it's much, much harder to do than that. And so, his films show you how difficult it is to find personal redemption. Then, unfortunately, in the second two thirds, it sort of makes it seem a lot easier than he's made it than it seems in the first third. So that was a wee bit of a disappointment. I would have preferred more grit, to be honest.
Mm.
And one of his characters in the gang, in the periodic detention gang, is so stupid that you almost can't believe that he exists. You know that. That was too much for me, I felt, you know, because he's the source of the comedy when the film decides it needs it, and it just felt a little bit too manufactured to me, that role. But you know, this is still a film that's better than anything else that's opened this week. I think it's better than I actually think it's a better film than Safety Not Guaranteed.
I think it's a stronger. Has a stronger narrative than Safety Not Guaranteed, because I really liked it. But for me, they're two different films. They're equally as good.
Right. Yeah. No, that's true. It does have a stronger narrative. I think it's got, as usual with Ken Loach, there are a lot of non-actors in it, and I think that there's a real authenticity about the presentation, about the region. You know, you just get the feeling that you're watching, for the first third at least, a slice of real life, and then it goes into a sort of little bit of a whimsical fantasy, I think, by the final two thirds. But that doesn't make it an unsatisfying ending, you know. Like I think that this is a film that audiences will respond to. I hate using that word flawed, because you know it's real sort of, it's a soft film critic word. It's like it's not a word that gets used in real life. But I do think that this is a film that's got real strength, but does have some flaws as well, unfortunately. Anything you'd like to add to it?
No, just
before I ask you for your two words.
Now, bring your tissues. Be ready to have some kind of like awkward loud laughs, as I did in the office today when rewatching it. But my two words for it would be wee dram.
Good. I've got two words, which is very rare for me, as I usually struggle to come up with the first lot of two words. My first is redemption shot. And my alternative, and you really only get this if you've seen it, Petey Coconuts.
Petey Coconut. Are you fucking joking?
That's going to get us. We will have to beat that out for the benefit of Mr. Apple and iTunes. Or then again, I might just see if we can sneak it through the censor.
Stand straight, fall back in line.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. Simon will be back next week, he promises us, because he will have ticked off the last of his projects and we'll be looking for another one, I expect, by next week. We'll be talking about the Foreign Language Academy Award frontrunner, The Intouchables. Tim Burton goes stop motion for Halloween with Frankenweenie. Paranormal Activity tries to make us jump for the fourth time, see if we can fall for that trick again. And Brad Pitt reunites with Australian director Andrew Dominic for Killing Them Softly. All that and more in next week's no doubt exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget you can find it in iTunes, where you can subscribe so that it'll be downloaded automatically. You can click the 5-star option on iTunes. That would be just fantastic. Of course, you can listen to it on our website as well. You can listen to it on my website, funeralsandsnakes.net. You can listen to it on Facebook. There's all sorts of places where you can listen to it. But if you want to...
No excuses, people.
If you want to download it to your personal portable device, then iTunes is probably the best way to do it. And you can give us feedback about the show, your movie experience, the general how you feel about life at various locations as well.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter at CinematicaCast and on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast and also online at our website www.cinematica.co.nz.
Somebody introduced me to Pinterest today.
Oh, gosh.
This is like yet another thing to pay attention to, I don't think. But anyway...
I have to delete my account. I had a secret account for like the special project I was doing. They insisted I got it, but I'm not falling into it.
Right, yes. Yeah, well, not until you get married anyway. The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're going to leave you with some more music. This is from the soundtrack, the hipstery soundtrack to Safety Not Guaranteed. This is, in fact, the producer and star of that film, Mark Duplass, with the theme song Big Machine. Until next week, that's all from me.
And from me.
Everybody's talking in the